49ers, Falcons, Week 15 crossover podcast, key matchups, key players, predictions coming up right now.
You are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, Locked On Falcons crossover. Brian Peacock at BD Peacock on Twitter. Eric Crocker at Eric underscore Crocker. And a very special guest. I guess we're the guests on his podcast today because this is going out on both. Aaron Freeman at Falc Fans, host of Locked On Falcons. I got to admit, Aaron, first of all, right off the bat, I got a little bit too... I got my chest puffed out about the 49ers versus the Falcons a little bit on yesterday's show. And I went as far as I said the Falcons are trash. I said that this is a bad team that has no business beating the 49ers or being in this playoff conversation, even though their record says otherwise at 6-7. The Niners coming in here hosting those Falcons at 7-6. Aaron, I said they're trash. I said they have the worst resume of any team that is considered a playoff contender right now, looking at those wins, looking at those losses so far in the 2021 season. Aaron, are the Falcons trash?
See, Brian, I thought, given this was going to be my first three-way on a crossover Thursday, that you guys would be gentle with me and kind and ease my way into this, but we're jumping off immediately on a bad foot here.
You haven't even heard what Croc's going to say about the Falcons yet.
No,
that was the nice part.
I was not nearly as disrespectful as Peacock.
Look, the Falcons are the best of the bad teams. That's basically been the story so far on Locked On Falcons that we talked about. This is a sort of game where this is their proving ground. They played a little bit better these last couple of weeks, been a little bit more competitive. It seems like things are sort of trending in the right direction, coming together for them. But this is a must-win game for them against a team that I think nobody believes is inferior to the Falcons. The 49ers are the better football team, and the Falcons are going to have to prove themselves on Sunday. And I think they have the potential to, but I'll be honest with you, I'm not going into this game with the expectations that the Falcons are going to win. But, I think there are some ways that the Falcons can sort of come out on top. The last time they faced the 49ers, that was the year in 2019 when the 49ers were on their way to the Super Bowl, and they kind of shocked the world and beat them back then. So it's certainly possible that an overlooked Falcons team, let's say that, I won't go as far as saying they're trash, but overlooked, it can surprise folks on Sunday.
Yeah, that 2019 game
is the only one overlooking them. Well, Peacock's the only one overlooking the Falcons. When I see the Falcons, I don't doubt any team that's led by a quarterback that is as good as Matt Ryan. Now, you guys have had some of your issues up front when protecting them. There's some receivers out. Does it look like he's going to get any more or less help heading into this game against the 49ers, whether it's from the receiver group or from the offensive line?
I mean, the Calvin Ridley's not coming back unless we get some surprise news, in the next 48 hours, which I don't expect to happen. So it's going to be Kyle Pitts. It's going to be Cordero Patterson. It's going to be Russell Gage. But those guys have been playing pretty good as of late. The offensive line has been up and down all season long. I think the good thing for the Falcons going for them up front is I think Nick Bosa is the one guy that you have to fear, and he's going to create problems for them. But the last time they played in that 2019 game, Jake Matthews did a really good job keeping him in check, despite, Nick Bosa having like a historic season that year. And that was a relatively quiet game for him. We know Nick Bosa likes to flip sides. So I think what the Falcons will do is when he's lined up on the left side, going up against the Falcons right tackle, Caleb McGarry, who's been up and down this year, but has had some good games against players like Brian Burns and Chase Young, but some rough games as well. They'll give him as much help as he can possibly get, and they'll probably wind up leaving Jake Matthews on an island, and Jake Matthews is used to that. And so I think that'll be their strategy. And I feel like if they can keep Nick Bosa in check, I no offense to Eric Armstead, but I don't know if there's a whole lot else that I'm fearful of from this 49ers pass rush moving forward. So I think the Falcons have the capacity, just whether they execute that game plan, as flawlessly as they need to be able to, win up front. And we'll just sort of see if the weapons can have a big day. Kyle Pitts is their go-to weapon, but I know I looked at some Football Outsiders numbers that say the 49ers are one of the best defending teams against tight ends. So we'll see if Kyle Pitts can, you know, break out of that and, you know, have a big day.
I was looking at Kyle Pitts' numbers, and actually, Aaron, you and I both play in the Locked On NFL Dynasty League, and I do have Kyle Pitts in that league. And I thought, ah, maybe he's been pretty disappointing. I feel like there's not been the big games except for maybe one. That 1 week was the week four or something like that. He kind of went off a little bit. And then I looked at his stats, and they're pretty darn good. Like, he's like, had, this is the quietest, like, amazing rookie tight end season of all time. Maybe it's because of what Kittle's done and Kelsey's done and Waller, and there's all these big-name tight ends doing big things. But how has he looked? Like, what is the returns on Kyle Pitts as a rookie, both as a blocker and a receiver?
Yeah, it's a weird thing with Kyle Pitts, because like you go into it thinking, okay, he's going to be this historically great rookie, which he's on the path to be, like the best rookie season a tight end has had since Mike Ditka 50 years ago. And then you look at those two monster games he had against, that you're referring to, against Miami and the Jets, and I think he had like a combined 16 catches for like 280 yards in those two games or something like that. And then every other week he just quietly gets like four or five catches for like 60, 70 yards, which is good by NFL standards. This, you know, what you expect from a top-notch receiver. But I think because he's filling kind of the shoes of Julio Jones, and it just leads to people expecting him to go out there and basically give you like eight or nine catches and 120 yards every single week. And he's just not at that level quite yet. But he's been quietly solid for this team. He's been a playmaker for them on third downs. You're not getting the red zone production that you want, but like, Falcon fans are used to that because we didn't get it from Julio Jones. So, you know, at some point we'll get that from Kyle Pitts. But I think he's been, you know, quiet is a hard thing to say because he's probably going to wind up being in the Pro Bowl this year. So it's not like people are not paying attention to how well he's played. It's just, I think the expectations were so high that he was going to come in and basically, you know, set the entire world on fire. And he has been that at times, but just not that every single week. But he's been solid every single week.
When you look at the pass catchers that they have, and you talked about the 49ers defense, how they've done well against tight end, they've been up and down on the outside, whether it's, you know, some guys getting penalties. Now the numbers say something a little different, but they have some liabilities on the outside. Do you think guys like Russell Gage or whoever else the Falcons have at receiver could potentially take advantage of having the Josh Norman out there, or potentially a rookie cornerback on the opposite side, whether it's Ambry Thomas or Diamador Lenore?
Yeah, I think the Falcons in recent weeks, you know, Russell Gage spends a lot of time in the slot. Kyle Pitts spends a lot of time in the slot. The Falcons recently have kind of really been committed to running a lot of sort of 3-by-1 sets and trying to use that to maximize their wide receiver core, because they don't have that true outside threat that you normally would expect, having a Calvin Ridley in the lineup or a Julio Jones in the lineup. And Russell Gage is not really that guy, but he's been productive the last couple of weeks. Had a really big game, career high day against Tampa Bay a couple of weeks ago with 11 catches, 130 yards in that game. And so the Falcons have done some creative ways, I think, to try to maximize a relatively limited group of receivers. You also have Cordero Patterson, who can line up not only in the backfield, but in the slot and out wide as well, and has been contributing in that capacity. So the Falcons have options, but in terms of like a go-to threat that you're going to be sitting here saying, oh no, that we have to stop this guy, you know, or else he's going to drop 80 or 100 yards on us or something like that. That's not really what the Falcons have at the position, but they have guys that, you know, what they want to do offensively. They want to, you know, run a balanced run first attack. I know you guys are familiar with that, watching Kyle Shanahan's offense, and, you know, be in a position on third manageable situations where they can convert. And they have plenty of guys that can fulfill that role if they can, you know, establish the run, as they say, on those early downs and get into those third managers and get out of situations where a guy like Nick Bosa can really pin his ears back. But in terms of a go-to sort of threat on the outside, no, they don't have anybody that I think 49ers fans should be too worried about in that regard.
Yeah, there's some really interesting similarities in these two teams. You get to kick your feet up and watch Sunday a matchup between maybe the NFC Pro Bowl tight ends, two really super talented, although very different tight ends in George Kittle and Kyle Pitts. And then two of the best running backs who used to be wide receivers in the league in Cordero Patterson and Deebo Samuel, which is very interesting. It's funny to see how their value goes up to play a less valuable position in an odd way there. There's a lot more questions I actually have for you, Aaron, and those Atlanta Falcons, and then we'll flip it over to you to hit Croc and I with some questions about these San Francisco 49ers. We'll make some predictions as well to end this program. But first, I want to let the listeners know about Stat Hero. I'm getting killed, by the way, in year-long fantasy leagues this year. And so that's when someone like Stat Hero comes in very handy. You get a new matchup every week. It's you against the house. It's one-on-one. No one plays daily fantasy sports. To lose, winning feels so much better. And traditional fantasy sports, long-term losing propositions, because a lot of times you're playing against professionals, or, I mean, who knows who you're playing against, and you're playing against a whole bunch of people, and there's less odds for you to win, up to four times better odds to win at Stat Hero. Stat Hero is a first of its kind daily fantasy sports platform where it's you versus the house in head-to-head fantasy matchups, winner take all. For example, one matchup you could play this week, you got to pick three quarterbacks. One of them is Jimmy G that the house has. Stat Hero has Stafford, Brady, and Garoppolo. Can you pick three quarterbacks that can beat them? I was going to say this week, Jimmy Garoppolo, potentially a sneaky good fantasy play in your daily fantasy leagues. Can you take those three quarterbacks on with another triumvirate of quarterbacks and beat the house? And Stat Hero, they showed you who it is. They show you the lineup that you have to beat before you play. So you can handpick your own team to beat Stat Hero one-on-one. A never-before-seen innovation of a fantasy sports and sports betting hybrid has Stat Hero players clocking odds four times better. So go sign up for free. Play head-to-head at stathero.com/lockedon. Use promo code locked on for a 100% deposit match. That's stathero.com/lockedon. Use promo code locked on for a 100% deposit match. stathero.com/lockedon. All right, Aaron, I want to go back to the offensive line real quick that Croc mentioned earlier. I know it's been somewhat of a weakness for the Falcons this year, and I think we talked about this a little bit on the Peacock and Williamson podcast, so apologies to those who had heard this conversation before. I'm sure it's most of you, because I know everybody listens to that podcast every single day right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, featuring me and Matt Williamson. Two offensive linemen that I thought were perfect fits for the 49ers the last couple of years were Matt Hennessy, who the Falcons ended up drafting at center in round three in 2020, and then Drew Dahlman in 2021, the son of a former 49er, in the fourth round this year. Very similar strengths and weaknesses with those two players. What's the plan there with those guys? And how come you snagged both of those players right out from under the 49ers? Is it just that Matt Hennessy disappointed and Dahlman's the guy to replace him now? One's a center, one's a guard long-term. What's the story with those two guys?
See, Brian, we talked about this over the summer. I know you're just finagling a way that you can, you know, snag a trade down the road to get one of these two guys. So I see where you're coming from with that.
We'll trade you Tom Compton, starting offensive tackle, for a backup center. I mean,
Falcons, we've been down the Tom Compton train once before. So, you know, I think
that's
good.
That's why he's a 49er, because Kyle Shanahan knows him. And if Kyle Shanahan knows you, you get to come play for the team or coach the team somehow.
There's a couple of ex-Falcons on that 49ers offensive line. You know, Daniel Brunskill was a guy I was very high on in Atlanta, and it never worked out for him. But, you know, in terms of the center position, yeah, it was interesting to see the Falcons draft Drew Dahlman. And so that led me to believe that, you know, Matt Hennessy was on, you know, guard to potentially lose his job. But he came out, won the job outright. It's been a little bit up and down. As you know, Brian, like, you know, both of those guys tend to struggle against bigger, more physical nose tackles. That was fully on display a couple of weeks ago when the Falcons played New England, and Christian Barmore, among other guys, were really pushing around Matt Hennessy. And then the following week against Jacksonville, the Falcons started to rotate Dahlman and Hennessy to get Dahlman really his first action of the season. He did pretty good in that Jacksonville game. Then the following week against Tampa Bay, they did the same thing, rotating those two guys, and Dahlman had a couple of bad snaps, and that led to the Falcons kind of nipping that in the bud. And now it seems like it's going to be Hennessy's job for the remainder of the year. But, you know, in the future, you know, I think both of those guys could wind up competing again next year for that job. And so I don't think the Falcons at this point in time, and I think that's kind of the story of this coaching staff with a lot of these roster pieces, is still trying to figure out what they have. And I think that's kind of what's going on with the center position. So I don't know if they're committed one way or the other. They'll just kind of figure it out as we move forward at that center position. But certainly we've had some positive performances from Matt Hennessy. Arguably his best game of the season was against Tampa Bay in that game that Dolman struggled. You know, looked much better going up against guys like Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh in that game than he did earlier in the season where he struggled against those guys. So it's been kind of up and down, and that's been kind of the story of the Falcons offensive line. There's been a lot of games where they've really struggled. There's been a lot of games where they've been fine. Some games where they've been solid, but it's just kind of up and down each and every week, and you don't really know what you're going to get.
I do have a couple of quick questions about the defense, and we haven't really talked about Atlanta and their defense. AJ Terrell, I feel like because Atlanta has been so up and down and the defense kind of is struggling, and they've been struggling to get, you know, any type of legit or consistent pressure on opposing quarterbacks. But AJ Terrell, he's been terrific all season. So what has kind of changed with AJ Terrell from, you know, his rookie year to now?
I think this year, like, we saw flashes of what AJ Terrell is doing now as a rookie, particularly at the end of the season. What happened in his rookie season was, you know, you had Eric, I know you know this, but like, you, cornerback is a hard position to come and transition to the NFL, just given the quality of wide receivers that you're going to face on a weekly basis. And the Falcons had a murderer's row of wide receivers that they faced last year. It was like Davante Adams, Allen Robinson this week, you know, and then on and on. And towards the end of his rookie season, the Falcons tried to utilize him as a shadow corner, and he struggled in that role, shadowing guys like Mike Evans and Keenan Allen and Michael Thomas for a couple of games, and gave up a lot of catches in those three games. And then at the end of the season, the Falcons like, okay, after Mike Evans, I think, put up like 80 yards on him in one quarter, they were like, okay, we're going to stop doing that. And then they switched him back to just parking him on the left side of the defense and saying, shut down that side of the field. And in those final games going up against guys like Tariq Hill and Antonio Brown, he pretty much shut that side of the field down. And that's basically where he picked up where he left off at the end of last season, and has basically just made the left side of the Falcons defense, the right side of opposing offenses, just kind of a no fly zone with his ball hawking skills. When the Falcons play their man coverage, he's locked on those guys. He's, I think, I can't remember the exact numbers, but like, I think he's given up the least amount of like yards and receptions in man coverage this year for like any of the top corners or whatever the case. Maybe he just gave up his first touchdown in man coverage this past week to, Robbie Anderson on a play. And so like, he's just been, you know, whether the Falcons are playing their cover two or cover three zone, he's just, it's been a no fly zone. And so it's just, you know, he's just good, I guess. I don't know the secret to it. It's just like the instincts, the awareness, the ball skills, he checks all the boxes, and we've been seeing that on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and the Falcons kind of got killed in the draft too that year. They're like, oh, you let the Cowboys have CeeDee Lamb, and maybe there was 16 really good players, and you drafted the 17th good player in that draft. And now we're seeing AJ Terrell outplay a lot of guys that were drafted in front of him. So I think Falcons fans are feeling pretty good about that. And it, just another lesson about the NFL draft, that you don't really know everything about these prospects on draft day like you think you do, even though things get spoken about as they're factual about any of these human beings on draft day. Last note on the Falcons defense, where's the biggest weakness? Where can the 49ers beat the Falcons? If the score is in the 49ers favor at the end of the day, what do you think went wrong on the defensive side of the ball? And is it something that's pretty, is it unique to this game, or is there somewhere that's like, yeah, this is what's been the problem all year?
I mean, the Falcons can't rush the quarterback. That's the biggest weakness on their team. They just cannot get pressure on the quarterback really at all this season. You know, because I'm so used to the Falcons not being able to get pressure on the quarterback, I don't even think about it anymore. It's just like, it's not going to happen. And you just kind of hope that, you know, other things go right for them in that regard. You know, I think probably specific to this matchup, you're worried about George Kittle. The Falcons don't really have a guy that can cover tight ends like that. The player that had been performing that role most of the season was Eric Harris. He's now out for the season with a torn pectoral muscle. His replacement, Jalen Hawkins, has flashed ability when he's been playing as basically a dime safety to be a little bit better of a matchup. But obviously George Kittle is just you're just not going to be able to do that in your real first action coming on the field and being able to lock that guy down. So I think, you know, the combination of not being able to pressure the quarterback and probably letting George Kittle have another big day like he did in that 2019 game, where I think he went for like 130 yards or something like that, is probably going to happen this week. But I think the thing that happened in that 2019 game was pretty much nobody else did anything for the 49ers, and it was basically just George Kittle every single time. And I guess that's a winning strategy. If it's just like the only person that catches a pass, if you can limit it to George Kittle and nobody else catches a pass, I guess that works for you. So maybe that's a formula the Falcons can repeat this week, and maybe they can have guys like AJ Terrell shut down Debo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk, or at least one side of the field. So we'll sort of have to see if that works out this time.
All right, Aaron, we got to give you a chance to grill us about these San Francisco 49ers. We got to make some predictions as well about this Week 15 matchup. And I know on Sunday when the Niners and Falcons game begins, I'm going to be comfortable. And I'm also going to be stylish because I'm going to be wearing some Stance socks. Founded in 2009, Stance Apparel represents a radical reinvention of socks, underwear, and active apparel. And I've got multiple pairs of socks and underwear from Stance. I've been gifted it in the past. It's an awesome holiday gift. It's unique designs for anybody that's on your holiday shopping list. It's really high quality socks, whether you want, you know, no shows or athletic socks, or you want dress socks or just some casual socks that are unique that nobody else is going to have on the block. Wu-Tang Clan socks, come on. Goonies, Major League Baseball, NBA, you name it, you can find it at stance.com. Stance believes that the perfect fit matters more than fitting in, that those who feel good do good. Go see for yourself. Register for an account at stance.com and get 15% off your first purchase. Use promo code Locked On at checkout to apply. That's promo code Locked On at stance.com. Enjoy the color and comfort of a life less ordinary with Stance.
Guys, it's the holiday season, and BetOnline has had you covered all season long and still does with the best odds, props, and lines more than ever as we march towards the NFL and college football playoffs. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports betting action this season, from playoff football to regular season basketball and hockey to boxing, UFC, all the way to your favorite Vegas casino games. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. If you're looking for what this line for this Falcons 49ers game this weekend is, it's the 49ers favored by 9 points. Maybe you feel good about that. If you do, why don't you just head over to the new updated desktop or mobile website at betonline.ag, sign up, and when you do, make sure you use the promo code Locked On. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus. That means if you deposit $200, you get $100 in free money to play with. Maybe you want to put that $100 on the Falcons or the 49ers. We'll see. But don't wait. Take advantage of all the amazing offers available at BetOnline, where the game starts.
9 points. That's a big line. That is a big line. 9 points. Bigger than I expected. We'll get to that. We'll get to those predictions coming up, Aaron. What do you got for us? What are you wondering about with this 2021 version of the San Francisco 49ers?
Well, the Falcons are dealing with a situation with their quarterback where you're sitting, okay, what's the future with Matt Ryan long term? You know, next year, this year, all that sort of stuff. It seems like the 49ers have their plan, their long-term plan in place with Trey Lance. But I'm just curious, sort of Jimmy Garoppolo, what is the situation with Jimmy Garoppolo, his performance so far this season from afar? Again, I'm not watching as much 49ers as you guys, but it seems like it's a lot of up and down. It's just like barely good enough to sort of retain the job. And sort of, are you expecting that? Is that assessment wrong? Are you expecting that to continue this weekend? Just good enough to get you the W, and that's all you need from Jimmy Garoppolo.
Croc, you want to take this one? I don't know if Croc wants to answer it because he can't get off the fence about Jimmy G. One week he's giving him a game ball. The next week he wants him out the door. What do you think, Croc?
Well, I think Mr. Freeman here is spot on with his evaluation of him. You know, I think we don't know what to think about Jimmy. And it's not even so much from week to week. It's almost like from moment to moment. You know, he can look bad throughout a game, but then have this stretch of looking like a top five quarterback in the NFL. You know, now, if you listen to 49er fans and what they think the 49ers have to do to win, it's, oh, you got to run the ball 40 times. So essentially they're saying, take the game out of Jimmy Garoppolo's hands. So it's kind of confusing with their strategy or how they feel about the quarterback, but ultimately he definitely does enough to win games. And that's pretty much what he's been throughout his tenure with the 49ers, where they haven't asked him a lot of times to win games for them. They've leaned on the run game and a good defense. And then there's these little moments where it's like, all right, Jimmy, we need you to kind of step up just a little bit. And then in that moment, more times than not, he does, and it ends up resulting in a win. But, you know, you can go through three quarters of this game, maybe seeing one drive where you're like, okay, this is a starting NFL quarterback. The rest of it, you're going to be scratching your head. Like, what is this? And why is it the rookie playing? And then when the 49ers need him most, you're going to be like, oh, okay, that must be the guy that Kyle Shanahan really likes. And then you'll see why Trey Lance hasn't really seen the field yet.
Now, we talked about some of these other matchups. I want to talk a little bit about the defense. And I already sort of basically gave my opinion that, you know, if you can keep Nick Bosa in check, contain him, as it were, you don't necessarily have a whole lot else to fear from this 49ers pass rush. Do you feel that that's a wrong assessment on my part? Is there somebody else that you guys feel like can really create havoc for this Falcons inconsistent offensive line?
Yeah, consistently, there hasn't been another player stepping up with Nick Bosa. Nick Bosa has been awesome. He's been one of the top five guys. I won't fight you if you want to put TJ Watt and Myles Garrett above him, but you know, I'll start to fight if you start putting too many more guys ahead of Nick Bosa. That's how good he's been. And he's not only getting sacks, but he's getting pressure, and he's relentless, and he's a problem. He's moving around a lot more than he had his first year, and so I think it's pretty much up to him. He decides if he wants to be on the left, if he wants to be on the right. So you never quite know where he's going to be, and I think that's good to keep offenses honest, so it's harder to game plan for where your best pass rusher is going to be. And you mentioned Eric Armstead, and he's been kicked inside, which I think is a better place for him, but I expected more pressure as an interior rusher, like we've seen from him in the past. The Niners' defensive line has been pretty good against the run, and there was some problems against the run earlier on, but the front seven has really shored that up. So really, it's who's the second guy going to be given, you know, any given week. And, you know, there'll be a week where Arden Key shows up and plays really well, and it works out. And then one game, it'll be DJ Jones. He was fantastic a couple weeks ago. Or Eric Armstead will have a good week. So every week there seems to be one guy who kind of does step up, but it's really inconsistent. In some weeks, nobody else steps up. So I think you've nailed your assessment of Nick Bosa, the 49ers defensive line, and Jimmy Garoppolo correct so far. That's pretty much the way things have gone so far. But Nick Bosa is so good, and the guys playing behind him on the second level, Aziz Al-Shaair, Ojulari. I'm going back to draft mode. He was one of my draft favorites that the 49ers passed on for Aaron Banks this year in the second round. Fred Warner is awesome. So those guys have been really good on the second level, which helps them out with both stuffing the run and when teams try to go over the middle of the field. So yeah, the 49ers defense has been bend, don't break. And if it wasn't for Nick Bosa, I think more times than not, the defense might break. But luckily for the 49ers, he's there and he's a problem.
And I do think Arden Key, he's been a big beneficiary of having Nick Bosa on the opposite side of him. You know, Arden Key in 37 games prior to signing with the 49ers, he had three total sacks. Now with the 49ers, he has four just this year. So he has definitely benefited from playing alongside Nick Bosa. And I almost feel like, you know, he's the one guy who's kind of started to hit stride a little bit, and you see him popping up in games and, you know, helping get some more pressure where we didn't know where the pressure was going to come from when D4 went down. And it's looking like right now 49ers might actually let D4 go in the coming days. So Arden Key, he's kind of been big in the sense of finding some more, you know, production, but still it's all Nick Bosa. I actually saw a stat this morning, I believe it was, that Nick Bosa has like 26 or 28 quarterback hits, and the next person on the 49ers is Arden Key with like seven. So it's been all Nick Bosa and not much else.
Yeah, and Arden Key doesn't even play that much, and Bosa gets doubled on he gets fully doubled on about 25% of his snaps, where there's two guys blocking him, and the other 75% of the snaps, it's a chip or something, essentially. So most pass rushing snaps, Bosa's got a little extra attention, has to deal with a lot, and when he's not doubled, he's doing a pretty good job at getting to the quarterback, and he's still fighting through double teams and getting to the quarterback a lot.
Now, I have a similar question about the 49ers passing attack, where, you know, George Kittle is the guy, but, you know, I've been watching a little bit of this 49 team from afar. It looks like Brandon Ayuk, after, you know, it seemed like, at least from afar, everybody was like, why isn't Brandon Ayuk getting more run? But it seems like he's starting to get more run. Obviously, Deebo Samuel, you know, is neck and neck with Cordero Patterson for the most versatile offensive weapon in the league. You know, is there someone else that you're expecting to have a big day on Sunday besides George Kittle?
Deebo? Debo Samuel. Debo Samuel's just trouble because you never know where he's going to be, and he is so good with the ball in his hands, and it's amazing to watch guys like Debo Samuel and Cordero Patterson, you know, be better running backs than receivers almost. And with Debo Samuel, he's got this magic ability to find the edge and find space, and part of that is just the numbers game with Kyle Shanahan, and I think that's why he likes to be able to use guys in positions that they're, you know, it says WR next to your name. If you can use him as an RB, I think that helps numbers for Kyle Shanahan and helps the math in the running game and helps the defense not have the right personnel in the field to defeat what you're trying to do, because the same guys could be 11 or 21 personnel. So that's, I think, key for the 49ers. I still want to see Debo used more as a receiver again than a running back, maybe use him two or three times as a running back instead of getting one catch and getting eight carries. I think that's a little bit odd. And as he gets more healthy, I think maybe we'll see more regular usage. But it's been nice to see Kittle the last 2 weeks show up as your number one receiving option with Debo hurt or used more as a running back. And then Ayuk's really settled into not the number one role that a lot of people thought, but he's settling into a nice number two wide receiver role, kind of the number three option after Debo and after Kittle. And we use Debo a lot as a running back, then Ayuk can step up as a receiver and Kittle can step up as a receiver. So they have a lot of options now going forward. And Ayuk was for sure in the doghouse to start, and he's maybe not to the point where everyone expected he was going to be this year, but you know, he's become a nice option on the outside and used a lot differently than both Kittle and Debo Samuel.
Okay. So, you know, that's going to do it for me with my 49ers question. I guess it's time to talk some predictions about what we expect to see on Sunday.
Were you surprised as I was about the 9-point line? That's a big line for teams that are only separated by one game, 7-6 versus 6-7. Niners at home favored by 9. And look, the Niners record is only 2-4 at home. Falcons record on the road is 5-2. So, like, if I don't know anything about these teams, and sometimes you're maybe too close to the fire and too clouded, if I'm just a better and I walk in and I see, okay, 6-7 at 7-6. This team's better on the road. This team's better at home. This team's on the road. This team's at home. 9 points? That's too many. I might just throw my money down on the Falcons. Is it that easy in this game? Like, 9 points to the Falcons seems like an easy bet, even though I would for sure take the 49ers straight up at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. The my expectation for what the line was, so I was a little surprised to see it is at 9. I was thinking maybe it would be like 6 or 7 or something like that. You know, a touchdown sort of gain, but, and I don't know exactly what the Falcons record is against the spread. It doesn't seem like it's good. Every time I pay attention to it, they don't cover. So, you know, every time I feel good, oh, they're going to cover this week, and they don't. So, you know, they might be like 500 or something like that. So it may be just kind of a coin toss situation, whether or not the Falcons will cover, but I would lean that direction. And of course, now that my Locked On Falcons listeners know, that's a kiss of death. That means the Falcons are going to get blown out by 40 points.
Thank you. I appreciate you going there, Aaron. I like that. So,
I would go 49ers money line and Falcons against the spread. But, you know, in terms of a final score, I would imagine it'll probably be something in the realm of like 49ers 30, Falcons 24. And I think really the key for the Falcons, if they want to keep this game close, is to do what, you know, Minnesota and Seattle did and get maybe a special teams touchdown. Maybe we'll get Cordero Patterson getting his first kick return touchdown of the season. Maybe we'll get a fake punt touchdown or block punt or something like that, that can provide a little bit of juice for the Falcons. And because I think if they try to go blow for blow with this 49ers offense, they're not going to be able to keep pace with them. I just think the 49ers are better at this point in time in that regard. So defensive touchdown, maybe. Who knows? They got a pick six the last 2 weeks. Their 2020 draft class has come through for them. Marlon Davidson 2 weeks ago. Who was it? Michael Walker last week. So Jalen Hawkins is going to be starting his real first game. And you got A.J. Terrell. So maybe one of those guys is due for a pick six. Jimmy Garoppolo, you guys talk about being up and down. Maybe we'll get one of those bad throws and it'll go the other way. And maybe that'll help the Falcons out with their cover.
He's going to throw one. Do they catch it? That's the question. He hit Jesse Bates between the 3 and 0 on his chest last week in that late. So he was a clutch drive because he didn't catch it, but it could have been a pick six the other way. That's the narrow line we're talking about. And I like where you went with that. Yeah, like a special teams touchdown, a turnover, defensive touchdown, something like that to really skew things in the Falcons' favor is kind of what I would see with the Falcons actually upsetting and beating the 49ers straight up. Croc, 3 for 3. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely like the 49ers, but the spread is too big. And my biggest reason why is because more times than not, the 49ers do things to keep opposing teams in the game. So I'm kind of banking on the 49ers to show, you know, who they have been by, you know, turning the ball over or doing some weird things, committing a bunch of penalties that make this game closer than it has to be. So I like the 49ers, but again, with, like you, Freeman, I'm talking about, you know, 49ers money line. You know, if I had to give a score, I would probably go with a score along the lines of what you said as well, 30-24 or, you know, 31-23, something along those lines. 49ers defense typically does a good job of not putting, giving up a ton of points. So I kind of lean more towards that, but yeah, 31-23, something along those lines, but it might even be closer than that, depending on which 49ers team shows up, the undisciplined one or the one that just runs the ball 40 times to kind of limit the opportunity to turn the ball over.
I almost feel like the 45.5 over under is the best bet here to go over that. I think this has an opportunity to be a high scoring game, weather permitting. There's a chance there's a little bit of water on the ground, a little bit of rain, but I think it's going to be dry. And in that case, maybe you go take the over in this one.
Yeah, I think if we do get maybe some weather there, both of these teams do like to run the football, so that necessarily isn't a conducive to these getting these big shootout type of performances. So maybe that will play a factor. So folks, so you pay attention to your weather apps. Maybe you want to switch that bet on Sunday morning or whatever.
Pay attention to your weather apps, and that'll tell you who to start in your fantasy leagues, and that'll tell you which way to bet on the over-under. Week 15, Falcons at 49ers. Falcons are done if they lose this one, Aaron? It's over?
I would say so. They have to kind of go 3-1 over this last 4 weeks. I don't think the 7 seed is getting in with an 8-9 record, and certainly not the Falcons with the tiebreakers basically not in their favor. So they got to finish 9-8 to really have a shot. And, you know, no offense to 49ers fans, I think the Bills are going to be a much tougher matchup than the 49ers are. So this is their most winnable of their unwinnable games. So I think they kind of have to win this one.
Yeah, it's a big swing for the Niners. I mean, this is a really important game. The Niners could go to 90% chance of making the playoffs or a 30% chance of making the playoffs if they win or lose this game Sunday. So it's a big one. Playoffs on the line at Levi's Stadium. Aaron, thank you so much for doing this crossover with us at BD Peacock, at Eric_Crocker, and at Falc Fans on Twitter. Thanks for making Locked On Falcons and Locked On 49ers your first listens every day. We'll be back tomorrow right at our normal spots right here. Thanks for listening. Talk to you then.